League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello friends and welcome to your Monday edition of the Kings of Anger Ipswich Town podcast. And what a happy Monday it is, friends. Ipswich Town winning again at Peterborough, a place they normally struggle. Not a happy hunting ground, London Road. But they swept the posh aside 3-0. A few stats to kick off with today, friends. 16 games unbeaten now for Ipswich Town. They've won 11 of their last 12 games. And they just need five more points from their last three games to get to the land of milk and honey, which is the championship. I am Mark Heath. I'm your host. And I'm joined, I'm pleased to say, by my friends and yours, the Wet Bandits, Stewie and Andy. Stewie, you raised your eyebrows there. You know who the Wet Bandits are?
No. Should I?
They're the burglars from Home Alone, friend, who you've been likened to.
I wasn't aware that that's what they were called as a duo.
What were you thinking when I said Wet Bandits?
I had no idea.
No, you are the Wet Bandits, boys. The likeness is uncanny, as you discussed. Hutchie, how are you feeling about that? How's things?
I'm fine with that. Stuart, quick, didn't really need to say this on the pod, but you left your bandit hat in the car. If, in case you're wondering where your little bandit hat, little woolly hat was, is in the car. So I've got
Thank you.
Bag.
Yeah.
So we shall rob it. We shall rob the houses of Barnsley again on Tuesday night. We've got all our kit.
Yes, like it. Flood the pitch afterwards. Friends, let's start there then, shall we? Ipswich Town won again. God, it's getting dull now, isn't it? At Peterborough at the weekend, a place that they normally struggle. And obviously, there's some nightmarish performances there in seasons past. 3-0. Stewie, do you want to kick us off? Where do you want to start with this one? They're all right, this side, aren't they?
Yeah. They're all right, aren't they? As I said in our video afterwards with Andy, running out of things to say about this team now. This was, in many ways, just like the Derby and the Bolton wins on the road, where it had a bit of everything. As McKenna said afterwards, a complete performance. Yes, it had the quality at the top end of the pitch with the goals, but it also had some resilient defending as well when required at times. Christian Walton coming up with some saves when called upon. There's an argument that Walton was their man of the match. But that suggests that it was a game that Ipswich were under the cosh in. They really weren't. They, I didn't think Peterborough got their setup right from the start. They went a bit more defence minded, which is a huge credit to Ipswich in terms of how they're playing. And they only really gave it a go when they were 2-0 down for a sort of 10-15 minute spell. I think Darren Ferguson admitted as much themselves. But a fully deserved win, 3-0 at Peterborough. As I said, it's feeling very, very close now, isn't it? But we're still not there yet.
One game at a time. Come on. Let's not look at the table just yet. Hutchie, as we said, you were both confident going into this game, which feels unusual going to Peterborough, in fact, saying you're confident. Were you surprised, though, with the result, the final score? I mean, 3-0 is a pretty impressive hoshing.
Yeah. I'm not surprised they won. I was expecting them to win. Maybe a bit surprised with the way it came about. But Ipswich had control of all areas of the pitch, really, for the vast majority of that. They had a few issues here and there, but not really that surprised, Mark. And like Stu says, it's hard to find new ways of saying just how good they are.
Shall we? Obviously, the temptation is to start with the goals, but Stu, you've already touched on it there. Christian Walton and the defence were lauded after this game. Connor Chaplin said it was the first thing they talked about and clapped after the game. And again, in all the things that we risk being blasé about, this team winning games, scoring all these goals, incredible support, again, obviously almost 4,000 people, 4,000 fans at Peterborough. The clean sheets and the reliability of the back line is something that could be overlooked amidst all the other kind of exciting things going on. Mm-hmm. Stewie, but that's obviously been an absolute bedrock of the success of this side.
Yeah, we keep sort of going back to what's changed for this run.
Hmm.
And McKenna and the players insist, not a lot, nothing really. We've just carried on doing what we've been doing all season. The difference is some of those fine margin games are now tipping that way. Am I allowed to say fine margins, by the way, now? I note that that's been put on the cliche list.
I think fine margins is a cliche. I don't know why. Where else you'd say that in your everyday life, a fine margin affair.
You could say that about a lot of things about football. anyway, the games that were draws during that sort of Christmas, either side of the Christmas period, what's tipping them towards wins now? Obviously, the January signings, I think, is the major thing. But there was a time where we were talking about Christian Walton maybe being under pressure. If you remember, there was a pod, and Hagki came in and had a couple of decent FA Cup performances. Walton has got back to his top standards. He wasn't in terrible form. He just wasn't hitting his own same heights as before. Same can be said of Wes Burns as well. So during this recent run, yes, Ipswich have been dominating games and deserving to win, but Walton has come up with some big moments, penalty saves, big moments when called upon. And that was the case again on Saturday with a couple of good saves. Well, more than a couple of good saves, but a couple in particular just before half-time that kept Ipswich in it.
And also, you have to kind of mention Wolfenden and Burgess, that entire back line, don't you, Hutchie? Because I know in your ratings, I think you gave them both nines. Again, because Town are scoring so many goals, winning so many games, it would be easy to overlook their contribution.
They're a proper pair now, aren't they? That this maybe is the second or third coming of them as a pair. There was a time where it was a bit more fluid, obviously, when George Edmondson was fit. There were times when he played. There were games where Richard Keogh played. But since these two have come back together again as a pair, they formed a proper partnership. Cameron Burgess, the improvement in Cameron Burgess over the last year under Kieran McKenna has been incredibly impressive, similar to the arc that Luke Wolfenden had within last season at the start of Kieran McKenna's reign as manager. Both of those players are poster boys for the coaching that's going on at Playford Road. They've both made huge improvements and they're a proper pair, proper central defensive pair who've got a bit of everything. Burgess, we know, can be a dominant player aerially, but the big improvement from him has come in terms of positioning and his work on the ground, where he's comfortable with the ball. He plays the ball. He's a part of getting Town moving. Wolfenden's always had that, but they've just formed a proper solid partnership with two fullbacks, of course, who are very attack minded. And it just all works. They found a system that's working for them.
Burgess coming into the team sort of coincides with this run of form as well, doesn't it? I think it does provide that left-footed balance that they lacked. So many of the things that we talked about after that Bristol Rovers draw, we wanted the team selection to be more consistent. That's happened. They needed to be more clinical. They were dominating games, having loads of chances, but not necessarily being ruthless enough. Well, that's now happened, obviously, in large part to the January signings that have come in. And we needed a couple of players just to get back to their top levels again, which Walton has done, which Burns has done. So, everything has all come together to create this remarkable run. We always felt that it was in them. All season, we've been saying they could go on a run at any moment. They could give someone a beating, a real big beating at any moment. Just those final little bits of the jigsaw have fallen into place, and that's what's created this ridiculous run, quite frankly. What is it, 10 wins from 11, 35 goals scored, 2 against during that run? That's just mad.
11 wins from 12, Stu.
12, sorry, 11 from 12. There you go.
I think, though, what the main takeaway from that conversation there, Stu, was that we turned this round. We said, did we not? Everything that needed to change, and fair enough to the boys, they listened clearly, took it on board, and did it. So it's all down to us.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but I also try and take solace from the fact that hopefully those sort of pieces and conversations we had at that time haven't completely dated. I don't think we're quite in sort of egg on your face territory. I think that I still maintain that a lot of the things that were being spoken about at that time were valid. And the things that have happened since then kind of back that up rather than fly in the face of it. I think they've been a little. I think they've mixed up their play a little bit more from that time onwards as well. I think they've, you know, they're not suddenly become direct overnight, but they mix it up a little bit more over the last few weeks as well. So, yeah, it's all coming together rather nicely, isn't it? But we're not there yet, as I keep saying.
Hutchie, should we talk about the goals? What had you? Which of the strikes had you purring in the press box? I know you're a noted purrer in the press box, or. If that's I don't know what that would be, sharp intake of breath. American Psycho meme. Yeah.
The second one.
Which one had you most intaking breath sharply?
Goal two, Chaplin's finish. Ooh. From Broadhead's past. There were two chances to at there. The pass and the finish.
Yeah, that was tremendous, wasn't it? Absolutely tremendous. We've spoken at length about Minty and how good he's been, but absolutely ridiculous. And then Freddie, boys, super sub. I know one of we tagged as a super sub, but that was a cracking finish to hit 20. I know he's not 20 in the league, Hutchie, but 20 overall for the season. What a finish, Dewey?
Yeah, brilliant. He's as we keep saying, it would have been very easy for him to lose his head a little bit, having just got himself into really good form. Then George Hurst arrives and he's playing this sub role, but he's doing it very well and took that nicely. It was hard to see on the replays, but first glance, I thought he'd taken it on his chest and swiveled and volleyed it in. I think it might be off his thigh, but good strength to hold the defender off and set himself up and produce that finish. And yeah, his goals per minute ratio will be very, very high, given that he's not started a huge number of games, 20-something games this season. Those starts have been pretty fragmented as well. Most he ever got was three starts in a row.
Yep.
So, you can file Freddie Ladapo when this season hopefully finishes the way that we think and believe it will. His contribution, Janoi Danasian's contribution... you can go through several players there's already graphics of the kind of the team now that will kind of be remembered and reeled off for years to come. But people like Freddie shouldn't be sort of forgotten their contribution in all of this.
McKenna was talking recently about the improvement in Ladapo and getting used to how McKenna works, how this team plays, improving by the week. And I think a big improvement is his ability from the bench, because earlier in the season he was not a player that particularly enthused me coming off the bench. He struggled to get into games, struggled to get up to speed with games. But recently, he's been brilliant off the bench. He's done exactly what the team need of him. He uses his strength in the right way. He moves well. He holds it up. Good positions. Finishes. Gets up to the speed of the game really, really quickly. And that's not easy to do. So just another example there of how he's worked his way into this team, into this season, and like Stu says, is a really important part of what they're hopefully going to achieve.
What did you make of Peterborough, Stewie? Because we said before, obviously Town traditionally do not fare well at Peterborough United, and Darren Ferguson after the game was absolutely fuming. He was saying that they essentially completely underperformed. He said he was angry about their display. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I was pretty underwhelmed by them. Ipswich have faced Johnson Clark Harris twice this season and he's not had much of a sniff in either of the two games. You wouldn't have watched him over the course of those 180 minutes and thought he was this goal machine that he is. He had the one chance from the edge of the box that Walton did well to save just before half time, but in general kept him very quiet. I feel like they kind of got caught between a rock and a hard place. Their game, naturally, is all-out attack. We'll score more goals than you, and it has been since Ferguson's returned. But I think they were a bit too wary and scared of really taking on Ipswich toe-to-toe. And so Ferguson's kind of switched from his usual 4-2-3-1. He went to three at the back as a bit more of an insurance policy. Yeah, as I say, it was only when they went 2-0 down that they really gave it a go, and it was too late by that point. I think, really, in hindsight, they should have just thrown caution to the wind and just made it the sort of game that we were expecting, that wide-open game of football. But instead, they kind of tried to make it into more of a derby-type match, a real sort of a scrap and feisty, and it made it quite a bitty first half. And you know, in years gone by, in the early stage of Ipswich Town's League One journey, those were the sort of games that they'd come unstuck in. But that's what I also liked about this game. We can wax lyrical about the goals that they're scoring, but they roll their sleeves up. They're ready to dig in and fight as well and earn the right to play. This isn't just a really technically gifted team. You had Morsey in the thick of it in midfield. Luongo, now you've got the two of them. You've got two fighters in the middle of the pitch now. And you can say the same sort of all over the pitch, really, can't you? Even Broadhead, to be fair, when he first came in, we talked about him being maybe a bit of a flair player. He's not used to kind of pressing high and all of that sort of stuff. I think even he's showing his worth off the ball now. Just game by game, you can see him battling for more headers and closing people down. I thought Hurst absolutely ran himself into the ground. We talked with a lot of praise for Freddie Ladapo, but he just seemed to be stuck in sprint mode. It's like you're having a game of FIFA where someone just doesn't take their finger off the trigger. He just seemed to charge the goalkeeper down and then he'd turn around and sprint 40 yards back to sort of chase the ball down. So that really sort of stopped Peterborough getting any supply line into their front players. From front to back, they defensively, this was a really good performance.
Actually, this may be a little bit unfair, this next question, given that we're just saying, obviously, they've not done it yet and they're one game at a time and all that kind of stuff. But we talked there about key partnerships emerging at the club, Wolfenden, Burgess, Morsey, Luongo. If and when Town go up into the Championship, can you see those kind of combos continuing to have success at the next level?
I don't see why not. There's an awful long way to go before that is an unfair question. You're correct. I don't see why not. That's all I'm going to say. They're good players. They're good partnerships. There will be if Ipswich get promoted, there will be changes to this team. Players will come into it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But they're a very, very good football team.
I can see why people are now starting to skip ahead, because when you've won 11 games out of 12 and you're in the form that you've got, it does feel very close. But all of a sudden, there seems to be a lot of talk about how well equipped is this team next year in the Championship, and will there be a pitch invasion if they do it on Saturday against Exeter? They're going to Barnsley on Tuesday night. There is one big hurdle still to overcome. If they can get through Tuesday night, I think I'd be a bit more comfortable approaching some of those sort of questions. They're natural. I get it. Everyone's on a high at the moment, but
Heath.
Let's just hold fire on some of that stuff at the minute. Let's not tempt fate.
You know me, boys. Excitable, like a child.
I see you, Mark Heath.
Yeah.
I see what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I consider my knuckles firmly wrapped there by the pair of you. Any other notes then from Peterborough before we move on? There's a lot to talk about today. So is there anything else you want to mention from Peterborough? I know Sam Morsey was getting a lot of praise again over the weekend, and Hutchie gave him a very high score in the ratings, as everyone got, I think, pretty much. Anything else you want to mention, boys, before we move on?
The atmosphere in general, yeah. I think just the usual doff of the cap to the away fans. We turned up at about 12:30, 1 o'clock, parked in that big car park just over the road from London Road Stadium. And as soon as you opened your car door, there was a waft of Ipswich Town chants sort of carrying on the wind from the various pubs in the city centre. They started very early in the morning, and it went all the way through. And our day was then finished getting into our car at about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and a few Ipswich fans staggering back across the car park, heading to another drinking hole. They enjoyed their day. And rightfully so. They made fantastic noise from start to the end, almost 4,000 of them. Once again, just incredible scenes when the goals went in, people tumbling down the steps. And our photographer was very worried about the well-being of some of them, went down quite hard over advertising hoardings and concrete steps and things. But I'm sure if it's just a few bumps and bruises, they won't mind at all, because, these are away days to cherish.
I saw something outside London Road that I'd never seen before, before the game, and it gripped me. Two words for you: ketchup udder.
What? That sounds hellish. What the hell is a ketchup udder?
Hanging from a burger van outside London Road was a big container with a silicon teat underneath. And the idea is you squeezed it. I really wanted to partake and have a go at it, but yeah. I didn't. But it's just hanging there, and you squeeze the ketchup from it onto your burger.
It was hanging on like a metal hook that you would see in a butcher's, you know, that you would see.
Yeah. How big was said udder? Oh, so it wasn't massive.
Several litres of ketchup. Well,
that's the udder size. That's the the teat was
The squeezable teat was the size of your water bottle.
More like this.
Okay. Wow.
That's screen cleaner, a laptop screen cleaner.
You know, you say Andy is, you don't ever see him get excited by stuff.
It's not just me. I think you would agree that he's generally not excitable.
There is an element of truth to that. But I would say this is up there in terms of the most excited I've seen him. Come on, right, let's go and get our passes. Let's get in. And he just kept, he'd walk about 10 yards away from said udder.
Yeah,
and then he would just sort of gravitate back to it. And he kept sort of putting his hand up to it.
I wanted to see someone.
I really
want to
give it a go.
Why didn't you just not partake, Hutchie? I mean, you're not spending that much money, surely, on a burger or a hot dog to use the udder. It'd be worth the outlay. Wow.
No. You could have just serviced other people buying burgers. Just to that. care for a squeeze?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Andy. I'll be your udder squeezer this afternoon. would you like a big squeeze or a small squeeze? Ketchup and udder are two of the least appealing words put together in the English language, and the images it's creating are not happy ones for me, boys. So, but yeah, I can appreciate the excitement around it. If you used said ketchup teat, let us know. Let us know how it was for you, friends. Shall we move on from Peterborough and ketchup udders? Is there anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so. It's just another really good performance, isn't it? I don't think there's a whole lot to break down other than that they were clinical in attack. They were strong in defence. They won pretty much all, as Andy said, they won pretty much all the battles all over the pitch. So, another one ticked off.
All I'm going to take away from this is ketchup udder. That's all I'm going to remember. Every time I think about Peterborough, that's what I'm going to be thinking about now. Anyway, friends, shall we move on? Draw a line under that. Another win. Team are not bad at all, are they? There were some big awards happening in London last night, the EFL Awards, which I think in terms of a news podcast we better talk about. Before that, though, just a reminder, I am shamelessly, some would say lamentably, sporting Kings of Anglia merchandise as we speak. I'm wearing the KOA men's premium hoodie. Lots of other options available. I've got my Kings of Anglia trucker hat on my single crutch behind me. Let's see if I can get that in. There we go. There's the trucker hat. I'm on one crutch now, boys. It's a major, major step forward. And I've also, although I have finished the coffee, I've got my my insulated travel coffee mug. And there's Stewie's snapback, which I imagine he's been wearing a lot. So obviously we launched the merch store on Thursday. I had 20% offer over the weekend. Lots of offers flying in. The hoodies particularly selling like hotcakes. And it's the last day. Monday today is the last day of the 20% off offer. So if you want to get yourself some KOA merch, get the badge in. Today is the day to do it. I mean, obviously, you're quite happy for you to pay full price, friends. But if you want 20% off, today is the last day. So get involved there. Get the badge in. Support the show. Right then, friends. EFL Awards last night. Town were up for a bunch of awards. A double, as it were. We talked before about how there was no nomination in the Player of the Year category. Scandalously. And they missed out on that kind of double award they're up for. Kieran McKenna was up for Manager of the Year, lost out to Stephen Schumacher of Plymouth. And Cameron Humphreys up for Young Crowd of the Year, lost out to Barley Mumba, also of Plymouth. In terms of the Team of the Year, League One Team of the Year, Town had two members, Leif Davis and Connor Chaplin. But arguably, Hutchie, as we've said before, they could have had more. And when we talked about this before, we kind of speculated these awards seem to be largely dictated by numbers. Which would explain Leif Davis and Connor Chaplin being in the side. But, for example, people like Sam Morsey missing out, Christian Walton missing out, even people like Wes Burns, Broadhead, I know he's been late to the party, but there's an argument for a lot of Town players to be at least up for mention in this time, isn't there?
I think that all kind of adds up to the question, how many of these would you swap for what is currently the Ipswich Town starting 11? And I think you're probably going to have to say none, aren't you, really? Given the form Town are in, would you swap any of them? No. Probably not. But you do also, I guess you also have to acknowledge that people like Michael Cooper have had really good seasons. Of course they've had, but I'm not swapping any of them, quite frankly, for the current Ipswich Town team. If you wanted me to put a team together to go out and face Barnsley tomorrow night, I think I'd go Ipswich in every single one of those positions, quite frankly.
You got any thoughts on this team of the year, Stewie?
I can't get past the configuration of it as a graphic to start with. That's triggering me big time.
Leaf Davis
is a right-sided centre-back, and then we've got Santos playing at left-back. Yeah. That sends a shiver up my spine immediately. Yeah. Why is Windass playing as the nine and Clark Harris in the hole? I understand sometimes you have to do a little bit of crowbarring to put people in that are not necessarily playing that position. I'll give you Chaplin sort of playing a bit more out towards the left if you need to get him in. But that was that was my immediate first thought.
Connor Hourihan? That's the player in the team that surprised me the most.
Yeah. Is there a little bit of sort of names coming into it there again? When the people who sort of pick these are probably not watching League One football week in, week out. So you say it's stats driven, and it's also sometimes, sadly, a little bit reputation driven as well. And it's Bannon and it's Hourihan. Although Morsi's name isn't exactly, shouldn't be a surprise with his Championship experience, but Sheffield Wednesday fans will probably tell you that Byers has been a more important player to them than Bannon, and the fact that their collapse has happened with him out would back that up. Derby fans would probably tell you that McGoldrick should be in there with the numbers that he's got this season. It's always difficult, isn't it? But yeah, I'd certainly have Morsi in there. And I think Walton, you'd have to back your boys, don't you? And I'd have Walton in there as well, definitely. So...
why do you do it now as well? I mean, you're right, Stu, the configuration of the side is the initial impression that's hard to get by. But we've still got three games left in the season. Why are they doing a team of the season and player of the season stuff now? It's all to, as we've discussed plenty of times today, it's all still to be decided.
Yeah, and I'm sure as it stands, you can't argue too much against Stephen Schumacher because Plymouth are top.
Exactly.
And there'd be an argument that they're doing it with lesser resources than Ipswich. They're not quite the big names in terms of clubs in this division. So you can't massively argue against it here and now. But if Ipswich go on to win the league, and this is McKenna's first ever full season as a football manager, as it is for Schumacher as well, to be fair. It's hard to separate those two. And I don't think you can argue with Barley Mumba, over Humphreys, given his impact and the amount of games he's played for Plymouth this season as well.
It does feel though as if people have just gone, who's top? Who's leading all the stats? Let's whack them in the side. Let's give manager of the year to the guy who's top of the league at the moment. It does feel a bit like that. Any other thoughts on that, Hutchie, before we move on to quite a large elephant in the room, which we need to discuss?
No, other than just to mention George Edmondson, who was up the Community Player of the Year. I didn't win that one. I think Omar Beckles of Leighton Orient won that. But a great achievement to be nominated. And Idris El Mazouni was in the League Two Team of the Year, wasn't he? Which is a great achievement for someone who I'm really pleased that he's played a full season of football, because so many of his loans have ended with knee ligament injuries or just not playing anywhere near what the plan was. So for him to play a full season and play a part in what is now a title win, they wrapped up the title at the weekend as well. So great achievement from him.
Don't talk to me about knee ligament injuries. They make me go cold. In terms of Idris El Mazouni, he's obviously had a great season there. What kind of future or part do you think he has to play at Town, boys? Again, probably a bit of an unfair question, which I've not warned you about, but think on it now.
Well, he's kind of redefined his position a little bit by all accounts. He's gone to Leyton Orient and was seen as more of a an 8/10, an attack-minded midfielder. And he's gone there and played as a sort of a box-to-box, deeper-lying number four and been very good at it. It doesn't surprise me. Andy's not having this.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
What labels would you like me to apply?
You've said it. Deep lying box to box midfielder doesn't need the number.
Okay.
It's not for me. But you crack on, boy.
I will. I'm now going to use it more just to annoy
Please
you.
Do.
Yeah, he's gone there and shown that he's got other sides to his game, and it doesn't surprise me because I've seen that he's got that physical element to his game. He looked sort of in last season when he got a few games, he looked like he can get stuck in as well. So yeah, the Leyton Orient fans are unified in their praise of him. I saw Darren Prattley did an interview after their promotion, a very strange promotion at Gillingham the other night, where they both do you see that? What happened? So Gillingham were 2-0 up, which meant that they were safe. Results elsewhere meant Orient were going up. There was a floodlight failure, which delayed the game. So by the time the game restarted, everything else had finished. So they knew they knew what was required. So they just passed the ball around for 10 minutes. There was opposition players hugging each other off the ball and things like that. All a bit weird. But anyway, Orient went up, and then Darren Prattley, who's kind of been there and done it and various promotions at different levels, was fulsome in his praise of Idris and sort of said he can see him playing at the very top. So very interesting to see how he fits in with Ipswich next year. Mm. He's got another year left plus an option. There will be plenty of interest in him. But Ipswich are pretty well stacked with central midfielders, aren't they? So it's hard to know which way that's going to go.
Stu, I'll tell you, I'm going to go back to the numbers thing. I'm sorry. So you've got 4, 6 and 8 as central midfielders there. Who's playing at centre-back and what numbers are they wearing?
Look, I didn't invent this. I'm not going to kick back on this at all.
You're peddling it though, mate. You're peddling it.
Yeah, I am. It's an example of football cliches just going into my brain through osmosis, and I should give it some more thought.
But also, Hutchie, you're a noted pedant on numbers, aren't you, in football? So
6 and 4, centre half. You happy with 6 for centre half?
Very happy.
Midfield.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Are they interchangeable? I would say that they're the only two numbers in football that I'm quite comfortable with being interchangeable.
Yeah. Yeah, but I wouldn't want them playing together as a central midfield duo because that's I've got my own issues and that's come to
Sam Morsi wearing 5, Zidane wearing 5. Where do you stand on 5 creeping further up the pitch?
I think Zidane can pull that off because he's Zidane, and there are some rare examples in football history where it can be pulled off by Zidane. Morsi has his reasons for wearing 5, and I respect people who have solid reasons for doing things. It's not natural, but not his reasons. Just it's not 5 is not a natural central midfield number, but I'm okay with it. But put it this way: if I saw a central midfield of I don't know where I'm even going with this.
Yeah, keep going, mate.
They don't even wear numbers 1 to 11 anymore. So it's a complete moot point because you can do whatever you want. But if you had in the 1 to 11, if you had a 3-man central midfield of 6, 8 and 4, you're then going to have a centre-back wearing, I don't know, I think you can get away with 2 as a centre-back. You could wear that, but then what's your right-back wearing?
We've gone down a rabbit hole here. Let's continue with it. Ideally in this team, we want Walton on with 1. We want Clark on 2. We want Davis on 3. Wolfenden on 6. I like a ball-playing centre-half wearing a 6 is fine with me. Burgess would be your number 5.
Yeah, left footer in a 5 is great as well. I'll be honest, a left foot suits a centre back 5.
Okay, 5 to me is just a head it and kick it centre half.
No,
and then yeah, Morsi would really be an eight if we're in the current lineup, wouldn't he? Luongo would be your four.
Yep, he has worn four, and I believe Morsi has worn eight in the past as well.
Broadhead to take 11, then we got Burns, Chaplin, Fine, and then your striker with the nine, be it Hurst or Ladapo.
There we are. I might edit this entire part of the podcast out.
People will have strong views, just like yourself, actually, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably.
This is probably the thing we'll get the most feedback about.
We can all meet up together and talk about it.
What's the biggest crime to numbers in football history, Hutchie? You must have some that have really, really ground your gears.
Khalid Boularouz wore number 9 at centre-half for Chelsea. William Gallas wore number 10 at centre-half for Arsenal. Not into that. Clint Dempsey's worn number 2 previously. Not into that.
Where do you stand on ridiculously high numbers?
How high?
Well, 60 and above.
It's just completely unnecessary.
Isn't it? Absolutely.
It very much is unnecessary, unless you've got a squad of that many players, which is also unnecessary. Unnecessary.
Leave this in, though, Hutch. I'm going to say this now, so you have to work really hard to cut it out. I hope you enjoyed that chat about numbers, friends, which has remained steadfastly in the podcast, I'm trusting. So there we go. Well, then, friends, we have to... What?
Just because we never edit any of this out, ever. It's going to stay just like everything else has always stayed.
It remains and is committed to history as part of this show. Right, then, friends, we have to address quite a large elephant in the room now, which is something that you would have seen over the weekend if you engage with our content. And we know a lot of you were engaging with it, or trying to at least over the weekend. So last week, the East Anglian Daily Times, for the first time in its history, launched a digital subscription, which means that essentially you can pay to access ad light and ad free versions of our articles. It's £3 for 3 months. That gets you access to an ad light website, which is 80% less advertising than it would otherwise have. And also, and this is the real thing that I'm really excited about, is the app, because that is completely ad free. Now, clearly, the concept of asking people to pay to read content that had previously been free will cause issues. And we understand that. We're used to it ourselves, aren't we? We expect to get content online for free. But unfortunately, this is probably, what, 15, 20 years too late? And essentially, it's something that we have to do, friends, for kind of the future of our industry. If I just explain briefly the kind of business model around journalism, I'll try and do this quickly because I have this chat for hours. I've been a journalist for almost a quarter of a century, and this has constantly been in discussion, pretty much, I would say, since day one, maybe give or take a couple of years. So advertising has traditionally funded journalism. So we journalists write the content, and the advertising pays the wages. Advertisers come to you, they say you sell 60,000 copies of the paper a day. I'm talking quite a long time ago now. We want to get involved in that. You help us to advertise our brand to all these people who are buying and reading the paper. This is what we'll pay you. And clearly, obviously, there's a cover price in there as well, which helps raise money. Now, as we all know, paper sales have been going like Norwich City in the Championship at the moment, like this. And friends, there's not a lot that we can do about that. That's a cultural thing. People just don't buy newspapers anymore because, and I'm the same as many of you, I work in newspapers and I can't remember the last time I bought a paper. I don't know why I would ever buy a paper because they're out of date pretty much as soon as they hit the street. So I can totally understand that people not buying papers. My mum and dad, who are 76, religiously buy a paper because that's a habit. But I think culturally, newspapers, sadly, are declining, and that's clearly the case. In the meantime, web views have been going like this, which is great. But unfortunately, to make money out of web views, we have to throw advertising on our websites. Now, clearly, we know it's an issue because a lot of you have talked to us about it before. Our websites at the moment are stock full of ads, and it does make the user experience quite a negative one. And it's something we moan about ourselves. You get autoplay videos, things popping up you're not interested in, all that kind of stuff. So we've listened to you, friends, and we said we can take the advertising away, and we've done that. for us to kind of make up the shortfall, if you like, and to continue to give you the journalism that, that you want and clearly enjoy, we have to make up that shortfall by asking you to pay for an ad light or an ad free version of what we do. So that there really is the kind of reasoning behind it. £3 for 3 months it is to start off with. As I say, 80% less ads on the website, completely ad free on the app. And we understand, friends, that when you're used to not paying for stuff and you suddenly are asked to pay for stuff, it's a bit of a mindset change. And I can understand people saying, I'm not going to do that. But what we hope is that you will support what we do, because we are here to provide a service, but equally we're also here to get paid, which is quite a big part of my life and all of us as professional journalists. So that really is the reasoning behind it. I appreciate there were some issues with registration and subscription, people trying to sign up over the weekend. We know a lot of you did, which is great. Those issues now have been ironed out, and that will be the case going forward. So that there is a brief potted history of why we're doing it and the issues facing journalism. I shall now stop talking and let the boys say anything they want to say.
First thing I'd say is that the app looks good. Looks really good.
Yeah.
It's a really... We know that our user experience hasn't been great, don't we? In terms of the website, like you say, we see it ourselves. So I'd really say that the app looks really good, and that's something that's worth looking into. And I think, Mark, it's also worth talking about what the future looks like for the pod in terms of that as well, because I think there's been some concerns about that, hasn't there?
Yeah. So the audio version of the podcast will obviously remain free. We don't want to take that away from people. We've got a big audience there, but we know equally that there's a lot of people who like to watch the video, and that is going to be part of the subscription going forward. If you want to watch the video, then you're going to have to sign up to the digital subscription. As I say, £3 for 3 months, 25p a week. Hopefully people would not consider that to be too much of a demand, even in today's kind of struggling times for many people. So that will be the way we're going to do the podcast going forward. Is there anything you want to say, Stu? Because I guess the other thing that we've seen over the weekend, apart from people just saying, I'm not going to pay for it, and we're going to get people, because that's the culture, has essentially been allegations that we're being greedy by asking people to pay for our content. And it feels weird, because in no other job do you have to justify asking people to pay for the product you're producing. You wouldn't walk into a pub and go, that pint, can I have it for free? So I don't fancy paying, or I don't want to pay for that car. I just want it. And obviously there's a cultural thing there, because people have been used to getting stuff free for so long. But it's certainly not a greedy money grab. I can absolutely guarantee that. It's absolutely necessary for the future of journalism going forward that people pay for what we produce.
Yeah, it's an uncomfortable one to talk about, this, isn't it? Because it's hard to discuss it without sounding a bit like a dick, is what I feel like.
Are you just saying I've just basically spent five minutes sounding like a dick?
No, you've very articulately sort of pointed out gently why we need to do this. Please pay for something that we produce. It kind of, might stoke up the imposter syndrome in me. My go-to thing is to be like, no, that's fine. If you don't want it, no, that's fine. Yeah, absolutely. If you don't think it's the quality you want, I guess the thing that people would throw back is, well, if you went into a pub and said, can I have this for free? And they said no, they go, well, actually, there's somewhere down the road that is giving away a pint for free, so we'll go there instead. Our argument would be that actually our beer's a bit nicer than the beer down the road or whatever. I don't know. All of the stuff that you can get elsewhere, we will still be putting, won't be behind a paywall. Anything from press conferences, as you boys have said, the podcast as an audio version will still go out for nothing. Match reports, the live coverage on game day, all of that won't be behind the sort of the hard paywall. It will just be the extra little bits and pieces that take that little bit more time, that have us up till late writing the opinions and ratings and all that sort of stuff that you can't get elsewhere. They'll just be the extra bits and pieces. So just see, if you want to sort of join our little club and support what we're doing, as you've said, it works out at 25p a week, and we'll let you in on a little secret. There's probably going to be quite a few offers along the way. If you've subscribed to The Athletic and others like that along the way, you'll know that there's never an offer too far away. And if you listen to the pod, we'll try and give you a little heads up along the way when there's an offer coming. Can I say that? I have.
Stewie's trying to give stuff away for free here. Here we go.
Hey, as I say, mate, we don't edit anything out of this. Yeah. So you've said it now. It's in.
There we go. Essentially, though, the key message is, listen, we know advertising is annoying. We know lots of you find it really hard to use the website. Take that away. Going to need you to pay a nominal amount to do that. But it's a much improved user experience. That app on its own is certainly worth, I would say, £1 a month. Because you can read all the stuff we put together totally free of adverts. And that, friends, is the reason that's happening. That's something that will be happening going forward. And as Stewie says, we'd like you to support us if you can on the journey. Hopefully you see the value in what we do. If not, I'm going to have to find something else to do. I might have to start that OnlyFans that I've been threatening for a while. And I'm not sure that will give me the sort of lifestyle I've become used to through journalism so far, boys. So I don't know. Please stop me from having to do that by paying £3 for 3 months. There's the tagline.
Are we using that in the
I think we are in the marketing. Yeah, we'll get that.
What are the burglars called from
the wet band? Again?
The wet band. That can be our. That's probably our OnlyFans name, isn't it?
No,
mate. We're not collaborating on OnlyFans. Like, yeah. I know we do everything together, Stu. But a joint OnlyFans.
I know. Oh dear. Anyway, there we go, friends. That was the elephant in the room. Had to address.
Can we also point out that the launch of the merch stuff is purely coincidental? Yeah. I know it's unfortunate, really, but yeah. You basically that was born out of you having just had your knee surgery and being really bored.
Yep.
And so you just set that up because it's something we've talked about for a little while. But and then all of a sudden we were told, oh yeah, and the digital stuff's the subscription stuff's getting launched next week, and it does look a little bit like a cynic give us your money moment. Completely coincidental, and I'd like to think you know that we're pretty open and telling the truth on that one.
Yeah, you dubbed last Thursday the Bob Geldof day, didn't you, Stu? And it all kind of seemed to kind of conspire to launch at the same time. Just give us your money. But please do give us your money. Right then, friends, that's that move. Let's draw a line under that. And obviously, we'll talk about that, address that as much as we can going forward. And if you want to ask us any questions about it, hit us up on social media. I know a lot of you were doing that over the weekend, and we'll try and answer any questions and explain as much as we can why we're doing it. Next up, Stu, we've said it's all about the next game. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, unlike me, who wants to get very far ahead of himself and talk about who might be playing in the Championship next season, where players are going to fit. Away at Barnsley, Stu, this is a game that clearly was postponed last month because of, as it turned out, only two international call-ups. I didn't like it at the time. I probably do quite like it now, given the run that Town have been on. It's easy, isn't it, to say that in hindsight. Captain Hindsight. But this game at Barnsley, although Barnsley, you would say now, are long shots for the top two, no easy games, Stu. And this one is not going to be an easy game. Barnsley, they've won 9 in a row at home. Obviously, there's narrative around a certain Mr. James Norwood, who, if you watch our Meet the Opposition video with Roscoe, again, £3, 3 months, you can watch that. The guy he spoke to from the Barnsley podcast says Norwood has been fantastic for them this season in terms of leadership and kind of an old head on the pitch. So how are we feeling about this, Stu? You're going to Barnsley on a Tuesday night. How buzzing are you?
Excited. Oakwell is normally well down the list, I'll be honest, of places I'm excited to go to. I think I've talked about them having the worst toilet experience in the Football League. It does feel a little bit like stepping back in time when I've gone to Oakwell before, but I am up for this. I'm excited. They've won 9 in a row at home, and they've beat Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday in that run. Ipswich's form we know about. Ipswich have gone to Derby and to Peterborough and to Bolton and won on the road. So this is a hell of a clash, and you only have to look at the table to see what's at stake. It was very easy to start thinking, oh, Barnsley are out of it now. They're 6 points behind. If they win this game, it's 3 points. 3-point gap with two to play, and then that suddenly puts a bit of pressure on Ipswich having to win their last two games to be mathematically sure. So it's going to be a big ask for Ipswich to go again after what they put into the game on Saturday. But as Kieran McKenna said, I trust the boys. I believe in them. And yeah, they've earned that belief and trust, haven't they?
Actually, how are you feeling about your impending trip to Barnsley?
I've never been. So I'm looking forward to seeing the world that Stu has described there. But yeah, no, it's huge, isn't it? We always hoped that the game getting switched to this point would mean it would be a titanic clash, because when it got switched, Ipswich were yet to kind of truly motor their way back into like the position they weren't in this position back then. They're like right, and we really hoped that it would get to this position at this point of the season, and this game would be as massive as it is. As it's turned out, it's Ipswich that are on the front foot. They're second. And they shouldn't have any fear of it. They don't fear big atmospheres. They've shown that in the past. They don't fear playing on the road against good teams. They've shown that in the past. Looking forward to seeing what the atmosphere is like, because I've seen a few Barnsley games on the TV and it's been brilliant. There's going to be 5,000 Ipswich fans in there, which will, of course, add an element to that as well. I'm just really excited. Like all these Ipswich games at the moment, just really excited to see what it brings.
On a scale of 1 to 10, Stu, how wary are you of Mr. Norwood? How inevitable is it that he'll have some part to play in this game, either scoring, getting sent off, doing something, which we're talking about on Wednesday morning?
No guarantee he'll start is the first thing I'd say. He didn't start their last game. They had Tedic and Cole up front. But he'll definitely he'll be on the pitch at some stage, and I'm sure he'll be in the manager's ear saying he wants to be starting in this one. We talked a lot about will he, won't he, Macaulay Bond celebrate against his former club when Charlton came to town. I can guarantee that James Norwood would celebrate this one.
Absolutely.
And I would imagine he might even have something that he's choreographed or got in mind, should he do so. Yeah, it does feel a bit like the character that we know with James Norwood, that he'll be bang up for this one. Did you see his celebration against Forest Green the other week? I mean, that goes back to some beef against Forest Green that goes back about like more than a decade, and he still remembers that and is cupping his ears to the fans and things like that. So, look, Ipswich have kept Johnson Clark-Harris quiet, as we said at the very start of this one. Am I fearful of James Norwood? No, I'm respectful of him being a good player and a goal scorer. I think he's got 10 this season, but I also have equal belief in Ipswich Town.
Hutchie, how are you feeling?
Same as I was a couple of minutes ago, mate. Feeling excited, feeling good.
Particularly about Norwood. I mean, he will.
Norwood.
He will, and he should celebrate if he does.
Yeah, of course he will. Of course he will. Yeah. The thing with that Forest Green that I liked about that Forest Green celebration is that he did it in front of the tiniest little stand where there were like three rows of people, none of whom were giving him any jip whatsoever. He was still like, going down. you're going down. None of the fans there batted an eyelid, but he remembers. Even if he's not on the pitch, he'll be in the ear of the assistant referee while he's out warming up or trying to have a go at some Town players from the touchline while he's stretching out. They've got other good players too. Same as Stu, really. Not respectful, but it's not kind of, there's no great fear over him. I think Town have shown they can handle strikers like him pretty well of late. So I'd hope they could do the same again. And even if he does score, Town are capable of scoring more goals than Barnsley as well. So you have to go into these games with the confidence that you have in this Ipswich team on your back rather than any fear over any opposition. That's how good Town have been.
As Andy says, there's other threats in this team that probably warrant more of a discussion for the team going into this game than James Norwood. Luke O'Connell, I think, is probably their key man. He sort of sits at the base of the midfield. Is their playmaker? Can they stop him? Mads Andersen, their big centre-half, got into the team of the year. So can either Hurst or Ladapo get the better of him? Two really informed sides. And you could probably go through both sets of players and come up with some really nice head-to-head battles all over the pitch.
Andersen, of course, used to play alongside Leif Davis at the back. So we'll have that insight. Before we get to predictions, boys, we have to explain, Stu. You said the worst toileting experience. People were going, what's all that about? So why is it so bad?
It's just got no roof. It's just one of those outdoor, just like wee up a wall with a little trough along by your feet. That's about it, really. Yeah,
sounds like the Speedway experience to me. They've gone with the Speedway package at the at Oakwell.
That's not for me at all. I'm a man who's very particular about my toileting environment. I'm not sure I could pass water in that scenario. Anyway, friends, we talked about the wet bandits, ketchup udders, and now we're talking about weeing on a wall. Let's move on to predictions, shall we, friends? Hutchie, what's going to happen? How many goals are Town going to win this one by, baby?
I'll be honest, I wouldn't, a draw, I think I'd be happy with a draw for Town in this game. I absolutely would be. It would put them still in a strong position. There's a lot kind of heart and head pulling one way and another in this one. I think Town might edge it though. I really do. I think I'm going to go for a 2-1 Ipswich win, but honestly, a draw. I think a draw would be absolutely fine for Town.
A draw would potentially send it, of course, down to the final day. Fingers would be bitten. Stewie, what are you saying prediction wise?
A draw is a good result for Ipswich, because it takes Barnsley out of the equation there. It keeps the 6-point gap. It keeps it very much in Ipswich's hands. So it would need them needing a win and a draw from Exeter and Fleetwood, which I'd feel pretty good about. And I think I will predict a draw. I think there's just very little to separate these two sides. It's coming hot off the heels of a game that Ipswich put a lot of energy into at Peterborough. So, yeah, a score draw, 1-1, something like that.
Worth reflecting, as we've already mentioned, Barnsley have won 9 in a row at home. So if Town do manage to get the win, that would be a pretty special.
Yeah, they've won 14 of their last 19.
Yeah.
So that gives they're in, you know, pretty damn close to Ipswich's form, really, over a prolonged period of time. They're a good team. So, and Oakwell sounds like it's a pretty lively place as well at the moment in terms of atmosphere and everything. So, I know, you know, it'd be really nice if Ipswich could win and then seal the job in front of a packed Portman Road on Saturday. That would be great. But I'm still at the stage where I just get it done. It'd be lovely for them to win the league. It'd be lovely for them to do it in front of their own fans, but just get up in the top two.
I get the sense, Stewie, you're kind of almost personally not wanting to look ahead for fear of jinxing it somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly how I feel. Yeah. It's exactly how I feel. It's that still got that little bit of that emotional armor on just to protect yourself. And I shouldn't really, because the team has proven itself. The team has wiped away so many of these doubts and worries. But get over this next last big hurdle, and then I might start to relax and loosen up a little bit.
So Hutchie's saying 2-1. You're saying 1-1. What else is there to talk about, friends, in terms of the whole experience before we take our leave? How are things? I guess we get to do the old shirt over Hutchie's shoulder, just across the T's and dot the I's. It's a sort of maroon / burgundy sort of number, is it? Is that fair to say?
That is very, very fair to say.
With a white collar, white sponsor. Looks like it's saying...
I mean, it says Fortuna across the front of the shirt.
Is that what it says?
Is that too obvious? Fortuna? Yeah,
it is too obvious.
Yeah, it's too obvious. It's not Fortuna, right. Just sort of.
But it says Fortuna or Fortuna.
It does say.
Okay.
Fortuna.
Is it a German Tide then?
No.
It's Nike.
I'm terrible at this game. I don't know why I play this game. I'm useless at it.
I'm out. I'm sorry. Here it comes.
Oh, it's got stripes on it as well. White stripes.
Little pin stripes.
I can't see what that says.
Sparta
Prague, is it?
Sparta Prague.
There we go.
Nice.
Little thing on the back there. The Legend of Sparta. No idea what that means. But it's provocative.
And then you've got rid of that, Hutchin. Immediately there, we see this season's Ipswich Town shirt. home shirt hanging behind you, which I think can only be a good omen and a good way to finish the podcast. Anything else to mention, boys? Anything else you want to talk about?
I did enjoy the mascots walking behind Kieran McKenna's club interview forlornly at the end. If you haven't seen that, go and check that out. It's club interview. They have a couple of builders. I don't quite know why they've got a couple of sort of Bob the Builder type mascots, and then they've got like a white rabbit that swings a carrot around, an oversized carrot, a bit sort of Donnie Darko-esque. They were giving it full beans before the game, trying to wind up the away fans, and the day ended with them walking, sad little mascots walking back past Kieran McKenna at the end.
How does a rabbit relate to Peterborough? I don't get that. How's that?
They used to have the posh man and lady, didn't they? The man who'd come out in his full top hat and everything in his full regalia.
Yeah, I might be speaking out of turn here, but I don't know if the posh man is still with us.
Okay,
which might explain the rabbit and its suggestive carrot.
That's quite a leap from a posh man to a rabbit. Kind of fits the tone of this podcast, really. We've been all over the place today. Friends, that brings us to the end of the show. It's an hour as it stands, although by the sound of it, the time Hutchie's done his cutting, it might be about half an hour long. Gets rid of all the things he doesn't like that we talked about today. Friends, obviously, a reminder to support our sponsors. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery. All that excellent clobber, especially that Weed Whacker 2.0, which we saw Hutchie so memorably test drive on this very video a couple of weeks ago. Go back and watch that if you've not. One Weed Whacker up one nose, one up the other, and the Weed Whacker 2.0 definitely emerged victorious. And also support, of course, Ginger Pickle. Our friends at Ginger Pickle, we just re-upped with them today. So if you need any sort of help with your Google Ads, your digital marketing, your SEO, Google Ginger Pickle. Find out how to get your pickle ginger and hook up with Tony Southgate and the boys at Ginger Pickle. And also, friends, one final plug, the Kings of Anglia merch. 20% off for the rest of the day. Get yourself some clobber because Town are on the verge of doing something they've not done for a quarter of a century. And it seems only right, as well as obviously supporting the club badge, you support Kings of Anglia when you're celebrating in the street and lifting a insulated coffee cup to the celebrations. We do, by the way, beer mugs as well with a KOA badge on. That would be the perfect way to celebrate, wouldn't it? There we go. Just saying, hashtag just saying, 20% off on the shop today. We'll share the links there. Right, friends, that brings us to the end of a show where we've covered a lot of ground. We've covered Ipswich Town winning at Posh. We've covered the EFL Awards. We've covered quite a serious chat around the big elephant in the room, which we hope you're going to support us with. And we've looked ahead to Barnsley, the terrible toileting facilities, and James Norwood, all wrapped up in one. We also heard the term ketchup udder. And obviously, we've got a new nickname for the boys, the Wet Bandits. If you're going to the game tomorrow, enjoy it. If you're not, follow it all with us. And we'll be back later on the week to talk all about it, friends. Have a great one.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.